couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Predator, Lizzie, The Wife, American Chaos, White Boy Rick, and A Simple Favor. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Seventh Sign. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to hit on is kind of rumor and speculation right now, and it's probably developing, and you know, who knows? By the time I'm done talking, there could be an update on this, and I don't even know. But apparently there's trouble in paradise with the DC Extended Universe. Henry Cavill has been rumored to have quit the franchise. There was a rumor that came out, and then he like tweeted something, and then Warner Brothers made a statement and said, no, he's still with the franchise. But this, of course, comes on the heels of Ben Affleck bowing out as Batman, and of course, he's in rehab right now, so they can't really do anything anyways. A lot of people are also speculating that this is a contract negotiation, and that makes sense. That actually makes total sense, because as it supposedly is, Cavill's been contracted for 4 movies, and he was in Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and Justice League. And he was supposed to have a cameo in Shazam, but apparently that didn't work out with filming schedules. But he's contracted for one other movie. And I think right now they're at a tipping point with the DC Extended Universe. They don't know where it's going. Because Justice League, while it was enjoyable to a degree, it was kind of a disappointment. And it also was fraught with troubles with the personal problems with Zack Snyder and then Joss Whedon taking over. And it kind of became two different types of movies. And the Zack Snyderverse really hasn't taken off like the Nolanverse or the cinematic universe for Marvel. And I think they're looking to maybe just reboot this. But then they also run into the problem of Wonder Woman was a huge success. And Gal Gadot is interwoven into those movies as Wonder Woman and the setup for the original Wonder Woman, which came out last year. It ties directly into the other movies. That's the problem when you try to build a franchise. This is actually why it was such a gamble for Marvel to tie their movies together. Because when you try and make multiple movies in the pipeline, if they suddenly don't become hits, unlike the Marvel movies, which all kind of became hits, then you have to restart and change things around. They're going to run into problems with that. And I think what they're kind of on a waiting pattern to see what happens with Aquaman. Because again, Aquaman's tied into these movies. He was in Justice League and he had a very brief moment in Batman versus Superman. And with the Ben Affleck being recast, they might just try and reboot the whole thing, or they might just try and sort of retcon everything and kind of tie it into Wonder Woman. And that's the problem of why I was saying years ago, I said, don't rush this. Take your time to build your franchise. But no, they wanted Justice League as soon as they could. And Warner Brothers really kind of screwed the pooch on this thing. But it might just be Cavill wanting to renegotiate his contract beyond that last movie he has to make. And they may just cut and run and bring in somebody else. Who knows? The other piece of news that I find interesting, and I'm kind of conflicted on this one, it's about The Predator. Apparently, Shane Black, who's the director, had gotten one of his friends to do a small bit part. He wasn't a major part. It was like literally one scene where his character hits on Olivia Munn. And she released the information that this guy actually had been in jail and is a registered sex offender. And she kind of, you know, in the wake of the Me Too movement, she's like, really, seriously, this is acceptable nowadays? Old Boys Club directing their friends in movies, even though they got a criminal record? And she kind of came under fire for it, and then people started supporting her. And I kind of stepped back, and I wanted to look at the story. And the guy's name's Steven Wilder Striegel. I think that's how you say his name. He apparently had been caught trying to coordinate a sexual rendezvous with a 14-year-old girl. Which is absolutely wrong and horrible and disgusting. But he did get arrested and he did go to jail for like 6 months and he got out. I mean, this is not somebody who's been ducking the law. He served that time. And I mean, it does beg the question, would you want to work with this guy? I don't think I would. But there are other jobs where they will hire ex-cons for reasonable work. I guess it brings up the issue of when does the Me Too movement start to cannibalize any sort of decency in a production? Because there is the point of the fact that in The Predator, there is a child in the movie, but he wasn't in any of the scenes. So I would imagine if you're a registered sex offender, that should be something that is known, especially if you've got children working in the production. But if he also was in a scene that had nothing to do with this kid, that's different. And also, I mean, this is, yeah, there was an intent there and he was caught attempting something. But there's a huge difference, for example, if you are arrested and go to jail for murder versus planning a murder. And while both are wrong, especially if you had intent there, but you also have to look at it and saying there's a big difference between this and say what like Bill Cosby did or what Harvey Weinstein did or even the accusations against Kevin Spacey. And not to dismiss or lessen these ideas, he went to jail and he's back out. Because I have to admit, I wouldn't want to work with a guy. But then again, you could be just working at a, you know, public works department and there could be somebody who's an ex-con that you don't even know. But does that mean that if you went to jail at all for any reason, you can't work on anything? That's a question to ask. Especially if you've served your time and done what the law has required you to do. I don't know. That's an up in the air question. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Garr. That sound means it's time to go into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the new Coen Brothers film, which opens on November 16th.
I'm Buster. Buster Scruggs.
You're shooting iron work.
Appears to do, yes.
Things have a way of escalating out here in the West.
My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings.
That man is a wonder. I'll just have to see him.
I love the Coen brothers, and I will see anything, and some of their movies are better than others. This one looks like it's cut from the same cloth of something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which I absolutely loved and I thought was a brilliant film. This looks like it's tongue-in-cheek. It looks like very typical Coen brothers that is very hard to encapsulate in a trailer. The most interesting thing is it's a Netflix movie. They picked this one up. Now, it's getting a limited theatrical release because with the Coen brothers, you always do an award push. It's coming out in November. But it's going to Netflix. This is a big deal because this is not just some movie like Bright, which is a blockbuster that makes it to Netflix. This is an award film that otherwise should have had a full-blown theatrical release. So, obviously, I'm looking forward to this one. The next one is Anna and the Apocalypse, which opens on November 30th.
"'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Young Anna was nestled, all snug in her bed, not knowing tomorrow she'd meet the undead."
It's funny, I was playing this trailer and my kids who are in a musical theater got all excited. Oh, this movie looks great. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of just throwing a musical as a musical. Like, everyone always says, oh, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog is great. Meh. I've never been into that, hey, let's just do a musical. Like, they did a Psych musical. Eh, that's not a turn-on for me. But then I said, this is the part that bothers me in the trailer.
Oh, no.
What?
Justin Bieber's a zombie.
They make a Justin Bieber joke. And my son says to me, he's like, well, you know, they make Justin Bieber jokes in a lot of things. I go, they don't put it in a trailer. That's like the one joke from the movie, and it's in the trailer. It's a Justin Bieber joke. How good can this film be? That, to me, says more about it than, you know, zombie apocalypse musical. I don't know. We'll see. It could be clever and fun, but I don't. Most musicals tend to just take too long, and there's too much music in them. The long running time becomes just an excuse to have songs that really don't propel the story. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Lizzie, White Boy Rick, and A Simple Favor. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. The first one is one I've actually seen. A couple of these I haven't seen, partly because one of them, which is White Boy Rick, I haven't seen, but that one was screened on the same night as The Predator. And I had to choose one, and The Predator's a bigger movie. And then A Simple Favor just wasn't screened. Sadly, they sent me a really cool swag. They sent me martini glasses and a shaker. They didn't send me the stuff to make martinis, though. You know, maybe I would have sprung to go see the movie if I actually would have gotten liquor. But I did get some martini paraphernalia. So that gives a little plus in the column for A Simple Favor. But we're going to talk about Lizzie first. Chloe Sevigny plays the infamous character Lizzie Borden, showing the possible truth behind the grisly murder surrounding her family.
To your knowledge, did your father have any enemies?
Eat, Lizzie.
I said you will eat.
You would apologize to your mother.
Don't you dare call her my mother.
Lizzie Andrew Borden, please place your right hand on the Bible before you. Do you swear before Almighty God to tell the truth in all matters pertaining to the murder of Andrew and Abby Borden?
I'm not a historian. I don't follow a lot of, you know, even just like creepy stories in the past. Of course, I'm aware of Lizzie Borden being a famous potential murderer. I guess she was never convicted, but a lot of people feel she definitely killed these people. It took place in 1892. I'm aware of just the infamy of it, so I never really studied this, the actual story behind it. So this was kind of interesting to watch to find out, you know, what happened in the background of Lizzie Borden. Chloe Sevigny plays Lizzie Borden, and Kristen Stewart plays Bridget, who is her live-in maid. The Bordens were a family that had wealth, but didn't manage it well, was essentially the issue. And that plays into the potential reason for the murders. But there was also a lot of tension in the family. Lizzie Borden had a sister, and they had a stepmother, and the stepmother they didn't get along with. And the father wasn't great at managing the money, and they were worried that they were going to be cut out of it. And of course, they didn't have control of it, not only because the father was still alive, but because they were women. You know, and this was 1892. Massachusetts or not, in America, it was 1892. You couldn't even vote at that point. But this film examines the buildup in a lot of ways, weighs a little heavily on the buildup because it's a slow burn. And I'm all for a slow burn movie, but you watch this trailer, the trailer's all exciting. It's got the boom, boom, you know, the cello music in there. And it's, but ultimately it takes forever to get to things. Now, when the axe murders start, it's kind of interesting, but leading up to it, it's just this sort of unpleasant, awkward, dysfunctional family drama. And Kristen Stewart's fine in it. She actually manages an Irish accent. She does fall into her tics and twitchy elements that she needs to get away from that. She's a great actor if she can get away from that. When she falls into her Twilight tics, it just ruins everything for me. And that's because the entirety of Twilight was just her twitching like she had Tourette's. But this movie is a good acting performance for her. Chloe Sevigny actually handles it better. She carries the movie. And like I said, once they get to the axe murders, it's cool because there's no definitive answer as to what exactly happened. But there's a lot of speculation. And this deals with a lot of the speculation that had been going around the relationships, not just with the parents, but with the maid and Lizzie Borden and what could have happened and what may have happened. And, you know, especially if you don't know anything about the Bordens at all, and just are aware that Lizzie Borden is this infamous accused murderer and the grisly nature of the crimes, it's an interesting movie. It's worth seeing just for the historical context, but boy, it's tough to get through that first hour or so. It's just really dull. So I'm going to have to say that Lizzie kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's play a quick trailer for White Boy Rick. A teen in Detroit becomes an unlikely criminal in the 1980s.
Y'all know who my dad is, right? Y'all know what he sell?
What you said your name was?
Rick.
Hey, White Boy Rick.
You good, Rick. You want to move weight? You come to me.
Break it down. The Dom Rocks.
Get yourself a crew and offload it. Before long, people know you're legit.
You're gonna get in too deep. Then they're not gonna let you out.
Ask yourself this. Would you believe a 15-year-old kid was working for the federal government?
This is one, like I said, it was screened, so I can't give it, I'm not giving it a preemptive suck or anything. I just wasn't able to go. And we have this happen, and this happens quite frequently in the fall when there's a lot of movies and there's the one big movie and then other movies get snuck in there. They'll screen it on the same night. So I had to make a choice between The Predator and White Boy Rick. And I really wanted to see White Boy Rick. The trailer looks really cool. And I have a feeling you're going to see this one carry through award season. It's still a little early to drop award movies. But I wouldn't be surprised if this one carries simply for Matthew McConaughey's name. I mean, he did win an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club. So having him in a movie is something you can always wrap a campaign around. But this looks like an intriguing story. It looks like something we've seen before. That's one of the problems when you get these true-to-life stories is, you know, we've seen the person getting wrapped up in drugs and crime and then want to become an informant or help somebody. But this looks like an interesting movie and has some good reviews and some buzz behind it. So I can't give it any sort of preemptive grade at all because I didn't see it and it was just a scheduling issue. But still, you know, hey, if is that the kind of movie you want to see, then it's out this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to hit really quickly is A Simple Favor. A vlogger strikes up a friendship with an elegant woman and has to answer for when she disappears.
I met Emily a few weeks ago. She is this wonderful, elegant person.
Stephanie, I need just a simple favor.
Anything.
People do terrible things for their own reasons. I want to know your secret. Tell me.
The most interesting part of this movie is that it's directed by Paul Feig, who's best known for doing broad comedies. And that's not I guess, no pun intended. He did movies like Bridesmaids and The Heat. He's also infamously did Ghostbusters. A lot of the films he's directed are female-centric movies. I mean, I have nothing against having female characters in the movies. I just think it's interesting that it's considered, oh, isn't it great that we have women in movies, but it's all still directed by guys. I think that that's sort of like that backhanded sexism that goes on in Hollywood. That's when they had Patty Jenkins direct Wonder Woman. It was a big deal. You know, you had a woman directing kind of a girl power movie. But A Simple Favor, I mean, I think this is mainly for fans of Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively, who are the stars in it. You know, Blake Lively, I've never thought she was a great actress, and she got a lot of accolades for The Age of Adeline, but I still didn't think she was great in that. And this one's supposed to be a big piece for her, but I've always found her kind of dull. I mean, she's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. She's gorgeous. But I think Anna Kendrick's a better actor. This looks intriguing, but it could be just it's a good trailer. But anyways, this wasn't screened. I mean, they sent me booze paraphernalia, but they didn't actually arrange a screening for me. So take that for what you will. It's getting decent reviews, though. A Simple Favor, though, for me, it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Predator and The Wife, which are not related at all.
Shake that.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with the new one that I saw that I had to see instead of White Boy Rick, and that is The Predator. 30 years after it was first encountered in the jungle, a new predator crash lands on Earth and ends up on the run from a ragtag group of soldiers and an even more fearsome predator.
Tell me about the mission. Did you see anything unusual?
Like an alien, you mean?
He saw something.
I think they're attempting hybridization. They're upgrading on every planet they visit.
We need to know if you pose a threat.
We're assassins. Isn't posing a threat kind of the point?
Shane Black is directing it, and he, of course, did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3 and The Nice Guys. He has a blend of action and comedy, but he's also a former actor, and he was in the original Predator. And there's a certain connection he has to the franchise, which I think is kind of cool. The movie itself, it has a Predator in it, and it's violent. It's an R-rated bloody action movie. If that's what you're into, that's great. Little bit too much CGI blood. That's something that I always, that bothers me, is not that they use CGI blood. It's just CGI blood still doesn't look real. And I'm not saying you can't use CGI to enhance things, but when you just have squelching and spurting, use some practical effects for that, because it still looks terrible. And that's one of the problems I have with this movie. As an action movie, as a genre picture, some of the special effects are really rough. Some of the digital effects, I mean, I'm not like the spaceships flying. That stuff looks cool. It's like when somebody gets their arms chopped off, that just doesn't look good. If you're going to make a movie and you're going to make it a standout, violent, bloody escapade, put some effort into making it look a little more real. Now, the other thing with this movie is, while it has, you know, it has all the stuff you would expect from a Predator movie, the characters aren't very good. And it's not that the Predator movies have had great characters forever. But there was something fun with that group of mercenaries from the first one. You had Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers and Jesse the Body Ventura. I mean, you had a whole bunch of these face guys from the 80s who always played tough guys, and they were great. They all kind of, even like Carl Weathers, who was never really an A-lister, really felt like he was up on par, you know, coming off of Apollo Creed in the 80s. This one, they have some recognizable names and good names in the movie. I mean, you know, Thomas Jane's one of the mercenaries or one of the soldiers. You got Keegan-Michael Key, who I love. Keegan-Michael Key, he's not Jesse Ventura. But the biggest problem in the cast is the main guy, Boyd Holbrook. I don't know what he's done. Apparently, he's done some TV. He's just not interesting as an actor. He's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's not even Danny Glover from Predator 2, which I actually like. I like Predator 2 quite a bit. It's over the top and ridiculous, but I thought it actually enhanced the franchise. I like them going from the jungle to the urban jungle. But this guy doesn't carry the movie. He feels like a TV actor thrust into a movie. The other thing is, and I'm going to try and say this without stepping into any bear traps here. Jacob Tremblay, who's a kid from Room, he's in this movie. He plays the Boyd Holbrook's character's son. Now, he's in the autistic spectrum. And that's like a key element to the movie, because they're talking about evolution and, you know, is this actually a disability, or is it like the next step in human evolution? And here's what bothers me about that. About 10 years ago or so, it suddenly became the trendy thing to put a character with either autism or in the Asperger spectrum as a main character in a movie or TV show. And that's fine. I mean, it's fine to represent that. And I think that's important. And I think it's important for people who are autistic or have Asperger's. It's important for them to see themselves in movies. The problem is, whenever I see a movie or a TV show that has a person like this, they don't represent them well. They show them having the problems with, you know, the oversensory and the like in the first scene of this kid in the scene, there's a fire alarm that goes off in his school and he overreacts. Where the teacher is when this fire alarm goes off, I have no idea, because everyone just abandons the kid, which is horrible. But the kid doesn't handle the fire alarm well. But then later in the movie, there's explosions and spaceships and trucks and gunfire. Kid doesn't have a problem with that. So they only represent these characters realistically when it's convenient for them. And I think that does a disservice to people with autism and those in the spectrum. Also, the other problem is, whenever you see a character like this, it's always Rain Man. It's always somebody who can do math really well, or there's the computer savant, or they're brilliant in some ways. And the reality is that the reality of life is people with Asperger's and autism are just like everybody else, in the sense that some people are incredibly gifted and some people aren't, and the majority of people aren't. And I think that as important as it is for people who have Asperger's or autism, as important as it is for them to see themselves on TV and in movies to be represented, I think it's demonstrative and insulting to only make them geniuses on TV or these savants on TV, which essentially says a message almost like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You're only worth something if you're valuable to us for this one part. And that's not true. People with autism, people with Asperger's are important, but they are not only important if they can do a lot of math or count cards at Las Vegas. And that's kind of the problem with this movie. The kid only has worth to the movie because he propels the story in this weird sci-fi element. Otherwise, it's a cliche, and it's, and to me, that just bothers. That's why I don't like, you know, the characters in that situation being used for cheap purposes in a movie. So that's me off my soapbox. Anyways, The Predator is fine if you just want to see bloody action, but it's not, I mean, it's not a great reboot. I'm going to be really generous and say it kind of rocks, but, you know, it just barely does.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is The Wife. A doting and supportive wife struggles with some hidden truths when her husband is chosen to be awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Hello?
It is my great honor to tell you, Mr. Castleman, that you have been chosen to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature.
I came across some of your stories in the college journal, beautifully written.
Joe had a very heavy hand as a teacher.
Did he encourage you to keep writing?
Don't ever think that you can get their approval.
Who's?
The men. The ones who decide who gets to be taken seriously.
A writer has to write.
A writer has to be read, honey.
The biggest reason to see this movie is for the performances. Glenn Close plays the wife. Jonathan Pryce plays the husband, who's the author. And they both do a great job acting. That's really what it is. It's a very talky academic thing. There's a friend of mine in town. His name's John DeSando. He works for WCBE, which is the NPR station in town. I go on a show every now and then to talk movies. If you follow me on Facebook, you've seen little videos of us. And he's a real academic, and he loves sitting around talk movies. And I remember when I left the theater, the rep asked what I thought. I'm like, it's a little pretentious. But John probably loved it. And John would, I know John loved it because that's his kind of movie. So it's frustrating because the whole thing is it's about a woman who doesn't get her due. And so she has to really settle in life and hide in the shadow of somebody. And I mean, I understand they work the story well enough to make that believable. But there's a part of me that's also like, I don't buy this. Somebody was sold a bill of goods. And I don't know. It does seem a bit of a stretch. And a little bit unbelievable, and not a whole lot happens in the movie. It's just all the relationship between the man and his wife, which, I mean, they're not hiding it. That's what the movie's about. It's called The Wife, and if you watch the trailers, it's very authentically telling you what it is. But like I said, this is a movie for people who like movies with people talking a lot about pretentious academic pursuits. You know, if you follow the Nobel Prize in Literature, you'll probably enjoy this movie. But if you're, you know, reading Nicholas Sparks novels or the latest, you know, Dan Brown book, you're probably not going to be interested in this. So I'm going to have to say, still, because of the performances, The Wife kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about American Chaos, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Seventh Sign. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with American Chaos. During the campaign of 2016, diehard Democrat James D. Stern delves into the American heartland to find out why people were supporting Donald Trump for president.
I'm a political junkie. I always know what's going on. But with this election, there's a new voice on the scene.
We'll put America first.
I don't think the people in blue states understand the people in red states at all. So I decided to go on the road and find out why people believe in this guy.
I know a couple weeks ago, a month or so ago, I completely railed against Dinesh D'Souza for his documentary, which kind of inserts himself into it. It's more about him than it is about anything. And it's very much leans into propaganda. And don't worry, next week when Fahrenheit 11.9 comes out, I am sure I'm going to completely take Michael Moore to the task for the exact same thing on the other side of the aisle. In general, I have always had a real problem with documentaries that really are propaganda. Movies that are purporting to be disinterested, third-party, respectable look at something and really just bending and twisting the truth and doing a lot of selective, quote-unquote, journalism. And that happens on both sides. It totally does. I put Dinesh D'Souza and Michael Moore in the same basket. Now, this movie is funny because American Cast is getting some really harsh reviews, and I was looking at some of them. And one of the reasons that it's getting harsh reviews are from tend to be critics on the left who are basically saying you're not hard enough on them. You're not, you know, dissecting the argument. You're not doing, essentially what Michael Moore does. But that's kind of the reason I liked this documentary a little bit more. This guy makes no qualms about who he is. From the beginning, he's like, I came from a Democratic family. My brother works with liberal organizations. In fact, he has a whole section in there where his brother worked on a bunch of environmental stuff for Obama. This guy is in no way claiming to be mainstream America. He's saying, no, I'm a liberal Democrat. And I want to find out why people were supporting Donald Trump. He made this in the 2016 election cycle. So, I mean, there's a little bit that happens after the election, but most of it's framed in the campaign. And I think that's valuable because what the guy does is he's like, I'm not going to go argue with the Trump supporters. I'm going to go out and talk to them. And I think that's important because too often people who don't agree with something will just monsterize it. And they just want to go in there and dismiss him or argue or yell. And the guy specifically takes a very different approach and says, you tell me why you support this guy. And there are times when he can't resist what he considers would be an answer to things. And I think that's fair. I think he handles it fairly. I mean, at a certain point, he's like, okay, I need to speak on this issue. And he does that about twice in the movies. But instead of having it just filled with talking heads academics or experts or anything like that, he just goes to the voters and he's like, why do you like this guy? And I think that that's a valuable lesson. It's a little bit misplaced because he does frame it, and I think it says so in the trailer, where he's like, red states and blue states don't always understand each other. And I'm like, well, part of it is, and I think this is the problem that's been since this campaign and beyond, is people do look at it as red state or blue state. They're like, oh, you're from California, therefore you're a blue state mentality. Well, there's a lot of people who vote red in blue states, and there's a lot of people who vote blue in red states. And while there are some that lean way far to the left or way far to the right, there's a mix of people everywhere. And I think this movie also misjudges what actually went on. And I even talked about this, during the Dinesh D'Souza documentary. There's a misunderstanding that there's this wildly popular swing to Trump. And I mean, he won the election. Absolutely, he did. But it was still kind of a mixed bag. I mean, he won the election, but there were seats lost in the House and Senate. The Republicans retained those, but they didn't get this big gain that you normally see. Like when Reagan was elected in 1980, huge wave going to the House and Senate as well. Not enough to overturn it, but you saw gains in the Congress. You didn't see that during this election. I think if anything, this election was always showing how conflicted the country is. And the other thing that he demonstrates by listening to the people talk, but I don't think he ever really addresses, is the underestimation that people had for the disdain for Hillary Clinton. Even at one point, she was very qualified and no. People hated Hillary Clinton. People have hated Hillary Clinton since the 90s. I know Democrats. I know diehard Democrats in the 90s who hated Hillary Clinton. And no, it's not because of sexism. And no, it's not because they couldn't stand a powerful woman. It's just nobody likes Hillary Clinton, and they never have. And I certainly think Trump capitalized on that. And there's other things that he looks at and examines. So I think he misses the boat on certain things, but I think it's a better approach because it's an attempt to understand. And yeah, he does frame it as blue state versus red state. And I think that that's the wrong way of looking at it. And he doesn't do his cause any good of making the Trump supporter look like middle America and average people and making the Democrats look like a bunch of elitist goofballs, because he has one scene where they're watching the debate. All of his liberal friends get together and watch the debate and they're looking like they're a wine and cheese club. And I'm like, well, this isn't necessarily representative of the Democratic Party, but this is certainly what I think middle America sees as the Democratic Party. So I think he misses the point in a lot of ways. So there's no way is this movie an accurate portrayal of America. But I think it's a good start in trying to get past the Facebook infighting that goes on. If anything, while the movie isn't great in its message, its approach is a welcome relief to what you normally see out there. So I'm going to have to say American Chaos actually kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week, The Nun did phenomenal at the box office. I mean, it knocked off Crazy Rich Asians, but people were expecting that. What was so amazing is it did extraordinarily well at the box office. It topped the weekend with over 50 million, almost 54 million, which is unheard of in September, unless you're talking It. I mean, maybe September's the new horror movie month. I mean, that's actually better than the other Conjuring movies, and the Conjuring movies are way better than The Nun. Peppermint came in a very distant second with just over 13 million, barely beating out Crazy Rich Asians. And God Bless the Broken Road came in out of the top 10. That director's got another movie out this week I didn't even cover, that Unbroken sequel. The same director. And I think that's going to come in under the top 10. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Our spotlight today is on The Seventh Sign, which is a movie from 1987 or 1988. Stars Demi Moore, a young Demi Moore, as a pregnant woman who is facing the end of days when a biblical prophecy seems to be happening around her.
The day is approaching. Yet no one will see.
Your baby's due in February, the 29th.
How'd you know that?
No one but the priest.
I know what's going to happen.
The woman.
I know what you're trying to do.
And the stranger.
It's time for you to know, Abby.
Until only one sign remains.
There's nothing you can do. You can't stop it.
This was a movie that I remember, it was sort of in that tail end of the Brat Pack type movies. There was a whole push of movies in the mid-80s that starred all these Brat Pack folks, everyone from Molly Ringwald to Rob Lowe, and Demi Moore was capitalizing on it. And this was her first sort of like really solo starring effort before we rolled into the 90s where the Brat Pack sort of dissipated a little bit. But this is an interesting movie because it's not a great film. It's being brought back on Blu-ray by Shout Factory, which I love their retro releases. And yeah, it's like 30 years old. So not a great movie, but it's an interesting movie in the sense of what it could be. It feels a bit like it has that, sort of reminds me a little bit of The Keep, where it's sort of this murky, dusty, it's a horror film. It works for a certain degree, and it works on that level of biblical prophecy, like The Omen. But it's not a great movie, but it is a slice of the 80s. It's interesting to watch. The most interesting thing, actually, is the behind-the-scenes stuff where they have new interviews with the writer and the director and some of the people who acted in it. And you get an idea of what it could have been and what they were trying to go for and how Hollywood is just a big sausage factory and where it really wasn't making the best movie that it was originally set out to make. But still, if you love the 80s and you want to watch an old 80s horror movie, you got The Seventh Sign. The Blu-ray's decent for the special features, but the movie itself kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Other movies that are out this week include Ocean's 8, Superfly, and The Big Bang Theory Season 11 and Rescue Me, the complete series. That is it for this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The House with a Clock in Its Walls, Life Itself, and Fahrenheit 11-9. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.